And welcome now to Home Run. 7 minutes into the hour of five, Monday to Friday, joining you from 4 to 7 is Home Run. That's with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And, you know, every Monday we have an hour. That's the first hour that is from 4 to 5. That is taken up by, Oluwazi, giving us a wonderful education into what's happening in the, okay, now I'm about to break something here. What's going on into the, Namibia's property market. That's something some of those, sources of information that I highly sought after, but it's not understood by a lot of people because they use a lot of, you know, just like every discipline, it has its own language. The moment you start having conversation with them, they start throwing big words like mortgage bonds, Lisa and Lisi. At this point, now you're thinking about your sister Lisa. No. That's not that. They're talking about a different Lisa. So you start talking about, what mortgages themselves. What's that word that always, that made my head spin? Was that 2023? Of course, it's still making my head spin. Welcome to the property market. Now we put a pause on that, and today we're going to talk about the African Union's point of view, not point of view, but plans with regards to their plans on how to handle Ebola. And okay, first of all, I can't believe we are having these discussions today. So it turns out that the African Union had, Africa CDC, which is a part of the African Union. And that's, Africa CDC, actually, think of it as an extension of the CDC, that's a Center for Disease Control, but the African version now, the CDC itself is Center for Disease Control. That's, that's a US thing. So the, Africa CDC with the CDC, had a discussion this year with regards to how to, to help Africa. That sigh is for, I have been having that sigh pretty much the whole day because, I looked at all the plans that the CDC, more like all the foreign, foreign institutions, foreign countries are sort of like coming to Africa's rescue with regards to handling some of the problems, whether it's energy related, industrial, overall industrial related or health related and all that, in terms of, fighting certain diseases. Ebola right now in Central Africa is, still causing chaos. Now, HIV and AIDS is, Al Jazeera made an entire, I think about 25 minutes, an expose, if I can call it that, of a Gaza province. Not Gaza, this one in Namibia, or the one in the Middle East. This is Gaza province, a province in Mozambique. It's one of those places that has been hit hard by the fallout of the pulling of financing by the US when Trump came into office from organizations like PEPFAR, for example, or all the UN and American based organizations that were helping to finance health related projects on the African continent, basically in developing countries, which obviously includes Africa in that developing countries category. Now, here's the thing. Because when Trump came into office, they were homies with Elon Musk, and they started to do a lot of budget cuts, and I can't blame them for that. It's their taxpayers' money, even though they are stealing it. That's for them and their taxpayers to sort out. But the fact that we are still talking about coming up with plans on how to handle Ebola better in 2026. And now having that discussion is not much of a problem, but having that discussion, while heavily relying on foreign funding is, I'm looking for a word that is less offensive here. Is stupid planning, because the first case of Ebola was recorded in, 1976 in DRC. And ever since, there have been several Ebola outbreaks all across the African continent, especially, it haven't been that much, but some of the, let me just say, the major Ebola outbreak ever since 1976 to 2026, basically, that I was able to find when I was looking this whole thing up was much of the outbreaks have happened for the most part in Central Africa. I think DRC, Congo Brazzaville, Uganda, that part, and parts of not equatorial, the parts of Guinea, Guinea. I'm not sure if this is Guinea Conakry or Guinea-Bissau. Yeah, now that part of so the parts of Benin. So you have much of the outbreak that have much of the Ebola outbreak have been recorded ever since the first outbreak was recorded in DRC. Then Zaire, for those of you that are I'm at 2K. Before it was DRC, it was Zaire. Long story. In the very same way that before it was Namibia, it was Southwest Africa. Before it was Tanzania, it was Tanganyika. Well, you get the picture. Now, the thing is, so what you're telling me is since 1976, we have been friends, at least that's what it's called, to use their own diplomatic language, with Western countries for a very long time. Since 1976, the first Ebola outbreak was recorded in 1976, and we are in 2026. We are still relying in terms of how to combat this problem. We are still relying on on external financing. 1976? Right. Now, here's the reason why I'm sort of like just, setting the whole thing or, on fire from the get-go. And that's because if you look at, post-World War II, to sort of, out of fear for the most part of communist expansion, that's one of the fear that actually drove the Western countries, especially the Americans, to finance a reconstruction of European countries. And now, if you look at how that reconstruction took place, and how Europe moved from Second World War, think 1946, all the way to 2026, with Germany, it took a little longer, considering Germany was the naughty child in this whole shenanigan. Now, Europe's reconstruction was not based on donor funding. And that's actually something that I find very fascinating. When it came to Europe's reconstruction after Second World War, the Americans knew what to do. It was mostly the Americans. The Americans, they knew what to do to avoid, Soviet expansion or communist expansion. They decided to pour in a lot of money into the reconstruction, aka creating industries. They funded a lot of, they helped finance a lot of industries that we have, that we see in Europe today. That, giving you all your fancy cars and all your fancy products that you get out of Europe. But, industries were built in Europe, and donations were piped straight to developing countries, of which think pretty much the entire Africa. Now, here's the thing that I find very fascinating. It's either Western, Western leaders, especially Americans, intentionally just decided to finance TREP in terms of donor funding developing countries, including Africa, by not, engaging with them in terms of, a trade relationship and industry upskilling and industry building. Because they could have done that. They did the exact same thing for Europe. Now, in other words, they knew that if you want to develop a country, you don't give them donation after donation. You establish trade relationship with them and you build industry in those countries. How do I know that? Am I an expert? No, I'm not, because that's exactly what the Europeans and the Americans are doing right now. This, if you ask me, is something that they should have done a long time ago. But, you know, for some reason, they didn't do that. Now, I'm not going to point all the fingers to, the Americans, because we have our own brains. And we have a lot of people with advanced degrees on this continent. So, since, a lot of African countries, I think, especially Nigeria, started having got their independence, and also the Francophone countries got their independence in the 1960s all the way to the 1970s. So from the 60s onward, all the way to the 1990s, all the way to 2000, there's not a single one of us on this continent with our advanced degrees that stood up and said, hang on a second, this whole donor funding, this is not how Europe was financed or was helped to industrialize. We just thought that, you know what? Europe was financed into industrialization. And we thought that, donation was going to work for us. Just donation. No upskilling. No industry building. Just donation. That could work. Well, now what you see is we are scrambling to build, trade relations with pretty much anyone that has a checkbook. And you have, we have the Europeans, because the EU has a lot of, economic significance in terms of, foreign direct investment on the African continent. And you see the Asian countries like South Korea, Japan, Singapore, China, establishing trade relations and building industries to help industrialize Africa. My question is, are we just figuring this out now? Because if anyone that has ever picked up a history book know, is that after Second World War, Europe was not donated into industrialization. They were upskilled and invested into industrialization. With our PhDs, we never thought to ask one question to the Americans or the Europeans. Think the 1970s and 80s, at least the 80s and 90s, as a belief. Hey, my Africans came back. Anyway, there's not a single person that at least stood up and said, okay, hang on a second. We see a lot of industrial development in terms of manufacturing and, value addition taking place on the taking place in Europe. Is it possible this whole donor funding is not going to work? Because from the look of things, we're just realizing that now. It wasn't until the second Trump administration that's when you saw the White House sort of like pivoting from, a donor-based type of relationship, a donation-based type of relationship with African countries towards a trade type of relationship with African countries. Sort of like China beat them to that. And I feel like to a large degree, it's easy to assume that, sort of like China, established that type of relationship, so now they had to play catch up. So, here's the question. It's either Western countries just decided, you know what, we're going to develop Europe, but those ones, just spoon feed them so that they don't develop. It's either that. I'm blaming both Western countries and Western leaders and African leaders. Western leaders for just sending money, billions and billions of dollars into of donor funding, and that has its own wide discussions as to who benefits from all this money, and it's a fascinating story, but that's not what we're here for. What I'm here to criticize is we're just figuring out now that investment works better than donation. Both the donors and the recipients, donors as aka Western countries and recipients aka African countries. Now, when you talk about donation, of course, this speaks to all developing countries that have been recipients to decades of donor funding from, that has been recipients to decades of donor funding from Western countries. But we're in Africa, so I'm just going to focus in Africa here. The fact that there's not a single one of us that at least stood up and said, okay, you know what? Actually, there are a lot of people that did that. We just never listened because a lot of people were busy buying properties in Switzerland and France to care for, you know, the busy getting their camborotos and wives designer bags from the kickbacks out of the donor funding. Okay, guys, here's the thing. If you are new, and you are waiting for an apology, it's not coming because, well, political correctness, not my thing. So now we are sitting here in 2026 talking about let's see how we can come up with plans of expanding a disease type of a threatening response, like especially Ebola. Right. Which brings up the question. So, there were two models of relationship that were established. Two models of relationship that were established by Western countries, especially the US, post-World War II. Model number one, is one that was geared towards industrialization. And that's the model that was applied to Europe. Build industries. Finance, I think value addition, local content policy type of thing. Now, when it comes to, when you look at the countries like Germany, for example, their local content have been running for a very long time. They gave you education, remember? Back when they were Prussia. Interesting enough. I mean, when I first heard the word Prussia, I thought Russia. It turns out, no. Interesting. Now, so let's now let me just pause my ranting so that we can just talk about what Africa has. We finally have a plan. Ever since we recorded the first outbreak in 1976, finally. We have a plan on how to address Ebola. No biggie. It's not that it took about, 40 years for us to realize. Really? You know what? I'm going to go for it.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo IGL FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushe indife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko IGL FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafilane IGL FM. The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome. So, my favorite part about my job is I just get to cook people for terrible decision making, especially after making fun of, after criticizing anyone else, especially the youth, for terrible decision making. So, the 5th of June, this is not HELM, this is the World Health Organization. The 5th of June, 2026, Africa CDC and the World, yeah, it's Africa CDC and the World Health Organization, not the Africa CDC and American CDC, the World Health Organization. The Africa CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and the World Health Organization launched in June a joint preparedness and response plan on the ongoing Ebola outbreak caused by the Ebola virus. I can't pronounce that other one. Now, the painful part is coming. You know, I mean, we all know that when it comes to planning, Africa is very good. It's the financing that's a problem. So we are very good at writing a shopping list and then expecting someone to come and finance that shopping list. Think of it this way. Africa, you know, think of Africa as yourself, assuming you were that dumb. And you now, you know, you have, you are sitting at home and you compile a shopping list of what you need in your kitchen. And then you call someone to come and, pay for that stuff that's missing in your kitchen. And then you somehow find a very good Samaritan or someone with a lot of ulterior motives. So, and then they come in and finance what's in your kitchen. They put in the fridge and everything. And then when they start to come and start eating the stuff that they bought for you in your kitchen. Hear me, my bro. By a donkey. Yeah. Anyway, so, and then when they start eating the stuff that they bought for you in your kitchen, you start complaining that, well, it's your property, it's your house, therefore, no one can touch your stuff. Well, they're allowed to tell you that, I bought this stuff for you. Dwight?
The Helmut. Good afternoon to the listeners.
How's the event?
Well, you know, there's so much things happening. I'm in the green hydrogen space that sometimes you can't even keep what you call it, keep track of everything.
Yeah.
But this is like a, this was a discussion about, it has the opportunity to transform Namibia into another direction. But before that, ad break.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today. Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuwana unongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali Ile konderewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. So if you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. So we continue with Dwight. So a lot of things going on in the green hydrogen industry.
Well, I won't say a lot because the discussion that I just came now from specifically also probably fits into the scenario that you were basically also here giving a public consultation presentation,
yeah.
In the sense that it starts a process, but a process based upon you can look at anything across Namibia potentially that can fit into a green transformation,
yeah,
for one way or another. This can be rural development, this can be community can be a rural community or can be an urban community. It's broad based primarily, and this is just to cite to us the Namibians that you can look at anything primarily that plays within this green industries realm and see how you can get money. Not that I'm Father Christmas for that particular last sentence, but that's the gist of the discussion. But we'll keep that for a future home run, and for David for tomorrow specifically, because he'll get first dibs at some of the particular content.
Yeah. So just the quick rush through of what I started with. So I just learned today that the first Ebola case was recorded in Zaire, today's DRC,
yeah,
in 1976, and we are talking about Africa's plans for not just overall. There are a lot of things that we respond to, but the plan that we are here to discuss today in relations to Africa's planning is specifically in response to Ebola outbreak, because ever since 1976 there have been multiple outbreaks in Central and West Africa of this virus, and from the look of things, from what I was able to gather, every time we need external assistance, which I'm saying I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying there have been it's good to it's one thing to to require, it's one thing to ask for external assistance, but it's one thing to be dependent on that external assistance, especially in terms of financing and expertise.
Yeah.
So this is something that started showing up in 1976, and we are in 2026. We are still, we're still planning. Shouldn't we have figured out some kind of plan by now?
Okay. This is obviously primarily based upon our discussion of we're obviously taking a Pan-African look at things.
Yeah.
Helmut, when you and I, we always get into this particular conversation of the African continent's drive and the ambitions that, it's the two of us here on Eagle FM on the home run scene, the ambitions and the potentials. But then,
and that word must be
we need to throw that word far away. But but that word, every time I say that word stings even more than what Wamkele Mene technically meant it to sting like. But it just stings even more. When we continuously look at those things, you could immediately see, Hamut, it's the invisible fragmentation that is present on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the invisible fragmentation to what I speak towards is the individual state, individual state representation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got this other action of when the countries come together for various particular things, for example, like in last week with regards to the migration report, where I was so disappointed when I discovered this report technically, Helmut, was compiled at the end of 2022. It collected data between 2020 and 2021, and then they decided to jump back and collect data to correlate it with data from an earlier period, I think more like 10 years back.
Yeah.
But then this report gets printed for the first time in 2025. A report that's finished in written, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
It's written. It's done. It's put together. Data has been analyzed, has been evaluated, has been interpreted. It's done. But it's first printed in 2025. And then I asked the lady who was walking around handing out, it was this nice little, it looks like a business card, but it's got like a QR code on it. and then you just need to scan it, and then you can access the report. And I asked the lady, madam, this thing says the fourth report, 2022. Where's the report that our minister is standing there on the stage for? This labor, and we'll get to talk about this labor, this migration report as well, dear listeners. Don't worry. But I'm citing something that I've been observing for a very long time. And then he says, no, it's the right report. The report that your minister and the other dignitaries just now unveiled. I said, look, I didn't want to show the disgust on my face to the lady who answered my query.
Yeah.
But then I sit there thinking to myself, so the report I downloaded on day one of this STC on labor, employment, and social development has been this report, which I thought probably is a little bit outdated because probably the AU is probably not that, you know, they're not that, I almost used another ugly word, English word, you know, a formal word, but I would have looked a little bit, you know, a little bit crude. The AU is probably not so, let me use it, man. It's not so dumb as to walk around with 2022 statistics in 2026.
But aren't we doing exactly that?
And then that's exactly what was launched. That's exactly what, unfortunately, our minister and the other representatives from the International Migration Organization, the International Labour Organization, and there was the AU guys from, and then Stats, and then the Swedish Statistics Agency. And we are launching a report with statistics or data that's 4 years old. In between, Helmut, this past weekend, Ceuta, or what? Ceuta, or whatever that thing's name is, that enclave that Spain has in Morocco.
Yeah.
That situation happened. Did you see the surprising thing of that one migrant that was told by the people, you know that the Spanish authorities will send you just back? You know that. He was happy and jubilant.
Okay, but what did he expect, though?
And for swimming, you know, that triathlon distance that they swam, because they swam like in a right-angle triangle.
Yeah.
In a right-angle scenario. They swam out in, you know, in 90 degrees this way, and they swam back, and then they swam in. I don't know how they did that, but they did it very cleverly, the people, specifically. Just to be told, yeah, there's 60,000 of you, welcome, you know, thank you, we will feed you, we will let you have a shower.
But after that,
we're loading you onto buses and sending you back.
There were about 60,000 of them.
Yeah.
And 40, you said about 40.
It grew to like 89,000, I think, by yesterday.
Jeez. Now, isn't 40-something thousand of them voluntarily just decided, you know what, well, I'm going back.
But that's the thing. They were the voluntary guys because they probably realized that from Spain, because I have a sneaky suspicion it has something to do with Spain's announcement back in June, the month before,
mm-hmm.
or end of May,
yeah.
where Spain said, contrary to the trend that is happening in Europe and the rest of the EU,
yeah.
of let's stop taking in migrant workers and migrants, specifically from North Africa and Africa, which speaks to some of the things that the Matei plan tries to achieve.
Yeah.
Spain went and said, you know what, guys, we will try to still tap into migrant labor to help our economy still flourish and go forward.
Yeah.
I have a sneaky suspicion it might be tied to that. But the distance between when that prime ministers of theirs, Sanchez, announced it in the end of May or in the middle of June, and now at the end of July, it's a long distance. You cannot even try to tie the two. But as I said, I have a sneaky suspicion because what is the motivation? Who told these people to show up there at the enclave?
Oh, 60,000 of them.
No, 80,000.
80,000 of them.
89,000 of them that cross over.
But told them? That's a very large number.
It's a specific number and specifically to try and get into Spain. It's not even like trying to go into Libya and then pay a trafficker on a questionable flotation device to get you to France. No, these guys were told go and collect here.
Okay, the sheer volume on its own raises a lot of suspicions, which brings up all kinds of discussions. But anyway, Well, you know, that fragmentation you pointed out with regards to how Africa sort of like tries to address its problem. Political fragmentation,
yeah,
that is not a problem. Our biggest problem is I don't hope for Africa to unite politically. That's a terrible idea. Because my question
that,
is
that is the one thing that I was trying to avoid.
No. Economically, yes. Politically, no. There'll be a lot of political. Imagine the bureaucracy. We can barely make things, you know, implement things on an individual state levels.
Yeah.
All 54 of us. Now, imagine the bureaucracy. I can only imagine how ridiculously large it's going to be. And, you know how the ECOWAS guys, you know, last week decided to announce that by 2027 we have a new currency.
I wonder on whose money.
Here's the thing. I'm just having a, well, just, you know, I just wake up this morning. I decided to look up this whole, African news, Al Jazeera and all those things. And then I come across one that has the headline of Guinea says it's opting out of ECOWAS single currency. I was like, okay, well, that didn't last then.
Mind you, Guinea is not one of the three misfit countries.
Nope.
Now, why would Guinea say no? Why would Guinea say no? Because Guinea is still part of the French community.
Yeah.
Because Guinea's money still sits where?
Paris.
In Paris. So, the particular question that those three misfits... Can I know that idea probably came from the misfits?
Last month, 12 members... Now, I'm assuming this is Guinea... I'm assuming this is Guinea-Conakry because Guinea-Bissau is always indicated Guinea-Bissau.
Yeah.
Yeah. But before we continue on the other side of the break.
Planning a trip from the coast to the north? Then travel with Intercape. Safe, dependable, and affordable with over 50 years of trusted service. From the 31st of July 2026, experience our new Baffles Bay to Otapi and Okahao via Oshakati route with convenient stops in Swakopmund, Arandas, Misakos, Karibib, Omaruru, Kalkfeld, Otivarongo, Otavi, Tumeb, Oshivelo, Omuthia, Onyanya, Onankali, Ondangwa, Ongwadiva, and Oshakati. Enjoy 50 kg of free luggage with your journey. Book your ticket at your nearest Intercape office on the Intercape app or call 081-950-2100. That's 081-950-2100. You can also visit our Intercape office at the Jean Mall Office Bay for bookings and inquiries. Intercape, safe, dependable, and affordable.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwala unongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. Let's continue. Let's look at Africa's plans to resolve Ebola. Now, before I hand you, before I pass the ball to you, Mr. Links, I came across something that, even more plans, but this one is Ebola specific. Now,
you can't get any more plans.
Africa.
We've just been speaking about when it comes to our segment on the AU.
AU.
On the home run. It's just plans.
Plans.
We are planning.
Plans.
We reaffirm
that the poor EU, especially GIZ, have to finance. And, now. Not us. We have to split the responsibility here. We plan, the EU finance.
And then and in between, we get told, listen, this is a spelling mistake, and that's a typo, and you can't actually do this. This is fairy tale land.
Yeah, and after they finance everything, we tell them to you know...
Yeah, pay reparations.
Yes. Like, what do we want, really?
What do we want?
Seriously.
But yeah, you were still saying anyway,
that. Yeah, so the Africa Center, now this is from June. This is from June of this year, the 5th of June, from World Health Organization. The Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Africa CDC, and the World Health Organization launched a joint continental preparedness and a response plan on the ongoing Ebola outbreak caused by Ebola virus. The plan aims to raise $518 million in US dollars. In US dollars. To support African countries together with partners to prepare for rapidly detected and respond to the outbreak. The 6 month plan covering June through to November brings together government partners and communities under a unified one response approach to strengthen outbreak response measures, including emergency coordination, disease surveillance, laboratory testing, infection prevention control, clinic care, and community engagement, research, logistics, and support for essential health services. The plan complements national responses plan launched by governments of the Republic of Congo and Uganda. Now, my question here is: why are we planning now for something that we should have? There's something that was pointed out by one lady. I believe she's West African on TikTok. That is it just me who is confused with regards to how how financing was done by especially the Americans post World War II? If you look at the type of financing that was done to help with Europe's reconstruction, it was more about building assembly plants, value addition, local content creation. That is the direction of financing that was done with regards to Europe. And then
it's actually rebuilding them. Yeah, remember, they had them,
so they were rebuilding.
Just rebuild,
So the rebuilding. Yeah. So that was so everything was tailored towards
was damaged.
Yeah. Bottom line, infrastructure development, which also created a lot of content, local content creation.
Mm.
Now, when it comes to, of course, to local content, they, they were not starting from scratch. Because they had a lot of that going on.
Which is us.
Yeah. Yeah. And Germany had a lot of that going on even during Second World War. Very questionable local content, but we're not going to dive into that. So
That local content for them worked, Helmut. I mean...
Well, it works for the Japanese with Unit 731, but that's a whole different discussion.
No, when I say no, I'm not even there.
Yeah.
I'm on how that local content was supported. They placed it all on the gold standard. That was one of the reasons that the dubious gold that is still stuck there in Switzerland.
What gold?
That Switzerland even goes like, whose gold? Me? Never. You didn't see that train come across the border.
Me? What train?
Who sent gold here? Whose gold are
it's
you?
It's a train, man. You should have seen it. Now, at the very same time that this type of financial relations or economic relations was going on with Europe and especially the Americans, this was around the same time that from the 1960s you see a lot of African countries achieving their independence.
Yeah.
And one thing that you begin to see is that up until the early 2000s, when you saw a lot of conversation with regards to to trade relation based type of relationship instead of a donor funding based one started happening.
Yeah.
But for a very long time, while a local content infrastructure development was taking place in Europe, a whole different type of relationship was being had by, was being had by especially the US and later Europe with developing countries, which included Africa. And that relationship was mostly based on donations. And now, I feel like it was China that basically flipped that script with instead of coming in with a bunch of donor fundings, it came in with, how about we just trade? And that sort of like made the West, also change their script from, from a donor funding type of relationship to a trade and diplomatic and mutual trade and diplomatic relations one, which is why I find the national security strategy that was published last day by the Trump administration very fascinating, because even though Africa is way at the bottom there, something that I find fascinating about that document.
How would we had half a page? We weren't way at the bottom. We had half a page.
So,
but we were way at the bottom.
So it's bad times too. So here's the... here's the... One thing
we
that...
We didn't even get a proper mention. They just... Look, skipped through us.
Now you know why... I really appreciate the Chinese for coming to flip the script, because I feel like they didn't want to create a trade type of relationship, because it was just much easier to give you this type of dependence in terms of donor funding. In the national security strategy, it's pointed out that it's time in, was it 2025? In 2025, that's when the White House is figuring out that it's time we change Africa's relationship from a donor funding one to a trade one. Really? It's either both African leaders and American leaders are so dumb, or they were both just, benefiting from the status quo of donor funding. They never actually bothered to build industries, because that's exactly what we are seeing right now. Foreign direct investment, mostly directed towards, infrastructure development. And even then, that infrastructure, for the most part, is Lobito Corridor.
Yeah, it's Lobito Corridor type.
So it's still extractive-oriented.
Yeah, which is probably even a thing that if you look at the Africa CDC discussion. What was that one phrase? What was the minister? No, it's the current minister of health. Back in last year when I went to that report launched, the one about the One Economy launched about gender-based violence, that we also looked at here on the show, back in last year. Okay, it's not just Minister Lewin Dow that has mentioned this, but there's also someone else. Primarily, when you look at like African responses to health, and specifically outbreaks of infectious diseases or diseases or non-infectious diseases, it has been a scenario, Helmut, of okay, what's the standard? If you look at this from a developmental sense, you ask the question of, okay, why don't I hear the same thing in Europe? You can maybe hear the same thing about an infectious disease outbreak in the US, because in the US, an immunization, a vaccination shot costs $1,000 upwards. That's them.
I never really got that part though.
It's primarily, Helmut, because there is no public healthcare for the Americans.
So the template being set is that's purely what happens private. When you privatize things.
Yeah.
Everything becomes ridiculous. Basically, everything becomes for profit, irrespective of how many people are suffering because of, as a result.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's terrible.
There was a time that America did actually have society-driven initiatives. Like, for example, if you look at that, they had social housing. For example, like the Bronx, like the projects, those names that they've got for those things in New York, those were for the immigrants that came into the U.S. They had a social housing issue. Those local authorities responded by unlocking money, because, if you sit with an influx of people into your country, they potentially could be bringing diseases to your country that your country does not know of.
Yeah.
So they built social housing. And that was those massive high-rise, those massive, residential units with thousands of people living in it. But this happened in the 1920s and happened before the First World War and just after the First World War. So now you look at scenarios of like, okay, what does a disease have in common, or the outbreak of a disease in the US and, for example, in Africa? It's potentially, let's rather say, negligent communities. Mm. What's the negligence here? For example, when this strain, this variant of Ebola broke out, I watched a France 24 report, because obviously it was breaking out specifically in East DRC. There was a conflict where you and I spoke last year about the conflict scenario in East DRC, in the same two provinces, North and South Kivu. The medical, the Congolese medical response teams on the ground have to walk around with a hand sanitizer kit. Every person they see, they spray their hands. Now, the first thing that told me from human habit is, okay, so personal hygiene is an issue in some of these countries in Africa. Meaning, like you and I, we were taught from primary school, for example, not just the teachers, but also there would be nurses coming to the schools in Namibia's public sector from the public hospitals to come and share information about what to do, how to respond, always wash your food, always wash your hands after coming out of the toilet, always wash your hands before you eat your food, stuff like that. Making sure that your hands are always clean when in certain scenarios. Now, if your medical response teams on the ground have to walk around with a hand sanitizer kit, there's an issue already. There's an issue already.
That means charity is not beginning from home.
Yes, charity is not beginning from home. It's also a scenario in terms of, okay, but before we continue, we're quickly going to take a short break. But we're going to still come back in terms of like human behavior feeding these outbreaks specifically.
Yeah.
Did you know that road safety is a shared responsibility? Become a good fellow walker by staying alert, using designated crossings, and making sure you're visible when it is dark, at dusk, and dawn. Let us unite to reach zero deaths and serious injuries, because together we can. This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Good fellow driver.
Welcome back. We continue with Homerun. We still have an hour to go. If you just tuned in, you didn't miss it. So there's still a human health type of discussion that we still have to have.
Yes. So I showed you primarily, okay, in the US, the US is an exception because any other country acknowledges public health is a must for the public. Even South Africa acknowledges that, because South Africa and Namibia try to play the dual role of dual systems, but we don't know what we want to be, purely capitalist or purely socialist. I am starting to like the mixed picture, because you can have the best of both worlds. However, this is obviously also based upon a scenario of, you know, earnings potential for people, but that's a completely different discussion, because that has to do with pricing measures, how a private facility, medical facility, views their inputs into the economy, and so on. That is a completely different discussion. When we come, for example, into the scenario of the Africa CDC's response, now, I don't know if the World Health Organization probably knows that we drag our feet as Africans. I'm not talking about Namibia. I'm talking about all of us as the rest of the
African
continent.
Union level.
Yeah. I don't know if the World Health knows that we drag our feet when it comes to specifically ensuring decent public health and decent overall healthy living in a country.
Yeah.
But we have to be honest, Helmut, in identifying certain particular problematic areas. The problematic areas being African countries have to realize that they've got to invest a lot more to improve people's lives versus just grandstanding, political grandstanding, showmanship.
Showmanship is the right word to
describe. What's the other word?
some sort of political bravado discussion. If we put the nonsense theatrics to the side,
yeah,
the nonsense theatrics, for example, like being some of the political parties really being, let's take Cameroon, being serious with life, and then they start impeachment procedures against Paul Biya, for example, because Biya is 90% of the year not in his own country; he lives in Switzerland.
He recently went missing. He, you know, came back again.
Yeah, but still, Helmut, is it healthy? Because the first thing that we've got to identify of such a particular scenario is, are things healthy, for example, in a country like Cameroon? Are they healthy? What would be their level of response, for example, to an outbreak? And Cameroon is not very far from the other Congo, Congo Brazzaville. I think it's like there's a country between that Congo and Cameroon, even
Congo Brazzaville and Congo Brazzaville and Cameroon.
Yeah, there's like a country between them, so that's not very far. And if we can clearly identify that primarily other immigration services on the continent are not Namibia, Botswana, Zambia, Angola, and South Africa, even. Where you actually have people patrolling the borders, and also other services, other entities working in that country, basically to monitor animal migration, because we've got animal migration across borders. Like elephants, you can put up a fence, elephant doesn't care. Homeboy just decides he will show you what Hulk does, and then he will Hulk smash your fence for you.
Yeah.
Situations like that, where you know that in Namibia, we've got agencies, offices, and ministries actively working, doing their part. Now, let's ask the question, for example, of how does Ebola come about? And you don't need, this is not rocket science, guys. There's a reason why the internet exists. It's a lovely resource. Ebola comes about when you eat meat not approved for human consumption. Look, there are certain wild meats, game meats that you can eat, and some that you don't. Now I will ask you, for those of you that have been to game farms, that buy game meat in your retail shops here in Windhoek or wherever in the urban centers across the country, ask yourself, how does that meat get approved to end up on your shelf? To end up in your food basket, to end up on your plate at home. Ask yourself. I myself, someone who's eaten game since I was like, doesn't matter how young I was. The same for you, Helmut, because you know that are certain kinds of games. You will even hear game meat connoisseurs tell you, don't eat zebra.
Yeah.
It's the worst meat. And then you'll have other connoisseurs above them that would say, never eat alligator or crocodile.
No.
It's rubbish. They will tell you it's rubbish. There's no taste to the thing. And then there are more above that that will tell you, don't eat certain kinds of antelope. But we know springbok, kudu, eland, even oryx, they're sort of like the defaults that you can eat.
Yeah.
Now we got to ask a question, Nehomon. COVID was just 5 years, 6 years that way. COVID's whole reason, yes, anyone can come and, yes, you can come and throw your $5 in there and say, yeah, it came out of China. True. But what is COVID's actual name? It's a zoonotic illness. It's an illness that comes from an animal. So why are we dabbing, and specifically as African countries, why are we not solving the nutrition discussion? What is allowed, what is not allowed? Los die ander diere uit, stick to the defaults. Play by the default. Just stick to defaults. And stop with the wars, because wars technically take food and production away.
creates desperation, so yeah. People are going to eat anything they can put their hands on.
Exactly. Because if you help with bringing security and stability to a country or to a community or a sin, people will be able to eat.
You know, when it comes to meat, one thing that I find interesting, and I'm not the only one. There's a whole community that have basically asked this question. That have you noticed that when it comes to meat in any cultures, 99 to 100% of the cultures the preferred meat in their different environment, in their different terrains, because the type of the type of wild animal you find in Africa are not the same type of wild animals you find, you find in Asia and you find in North and South America.
Mm.
But the point is, much of the meat that is eaten all across cultures is most likely going to be herbivores.
Yes.
Carnivores, not much.
Goat, cattle, mutton, which is sheep. There's an active debate that every time I bump into someone who says, hey, I'd like lamb, and I'm like, you know that that's actually mutton, you know?
Just go with that. Lamb chops, please.
But yeah.
Look, man, it's on the menu. I'm just ordering.
I know. But when we look at these particular approved meats, pork is there, fish is there. The question then also that starts from this discussion is accessibility to these basic animal proteins.
Yeah.
But cheese is also an animal protein.
Yeah.
Milk also has a protein in it, which is animal. So
I mean, cheese, milk, same WhatsApp group.
Yes, yogurt the same as well. It's slightly fermented or cultured, as the word would be with yogurt. But there's a protein in there. And all of these are animal products. But the broader discussion, Helmut, is that when you come to a place like Namibia, you see a thriving distribution network of where you can get the food. Then you also have a thriving I'll call it a subculture, because we now have a consumption culture, meaning you buy and you consume. But there's a sub or parallel culture of subsistence farming as well. And even there, Helmut, you don't see dodgy meat being on the menu. You will see a household, doesn't matter where you go, in any communal land area or to any commercial farm area, you will see that there is a standard animal protein and a stand, and then it's complemented with vegetable. What's the other one? With crop products factoring into the diet of that person.
Yeah.
Yes, and one of the problems could be that a household could end up with, because they are practicing monoculture, they might end up with a dietary deficiency. Yes, but they at least have a known food. I don't know what's going on. That every year, Ebola comes and goes in DRC. I don't know.
I mean, that's taking to, you are what you eat to, taking the statement, you are what you eat, to a whole another level. But,
true.
Okay, the thing is, is this in February? Let me just make sure. February, that's a whole different document. So that's July 15th. This is the African Medicine Agency now, signing a memorandum of understanding with the, MFA. That is the, the Medicines for Africa.
Yeah.
Medicines for Africa is, it's a South Africa, it's a South African organization. That's advocates for the safety and the regulations around prescription medicine, because that whole memorandum of understanding is centered around how to combat illicit drug movement, and this is drug in relations to to mostly synthetic drugs mm-hmm. coming out of the pharmaceutical industry. Mm. Now, when you and I talked about, when we had the drug discussion, the illegal drug use and transport, all basically logistics on the African continent. One thing that that report pointed out was that much of the illegal drugs that's consumed in the illegal drug world market is coming out of the pharmaceutical industry. So now you have basically an entire supply chain going on here.
Yeah.
You have the pharmaceutical industry that's producing some of these drugs to genuinely try to combat certain diseases and medical conditions. But some of them finds itself on the black market where it feeds the illegal drug industry. So now if you have the illicit drug movement on the African continent. So that means that's where the ingredients of the illegal drugs that's causing all kinds of addictions on the African continent, that's where they're coming from. So the African Medicine Agency and the Medicines for Africa, Medicines for Africa signed an agreement, in July. Signed basically a memorandum of understanding. That's a whole. It's an agreement, but it's not one that is binding. It's more like, we are on the same page. We totally agree, but we don't have, the type of, a contract that basically has the legislative, backing behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. The AMA and the MFA signed a memorandum of understanding to strengthen advocacy and communication on the continent's collective response to substandard and falsified medicine products. Now this one is actually a very bleak one because there are type of meds that has all kinds of questionable side effects that they are banned from the regular pharmaceutical industry in terms of in terms of trade, but because of unregulated boundaries in terms of how this medicine is moved, a lot of it finds itself especially over the counter and in places like DRC. Again, DRC came up there, and then a lot of people have been given medicine that have been given all kinds of diseases.
USAFE's customers love combos, right? Well, for just $589 Namibian, you can get 10 kilogram Champion Super Maize Meal, 10 kilograms of Bokomo Fed Coot Flour, 10 kilograms of Marathon of Brown or White Sugar, 5 kilos of Nice Rice, plus 1 kilo of Grande Pasta. That's just $589 Namibian for 5 essential products. The ShopRite Group buys bulk, so you can save. Yes, we all save at USAFE.
So, one thing that was pointed out now here by the African Medicines Agency and was that under the Memorandum of Understanding, the AMA will leverage the expertise of the MFA in advocacy in communication to support national regulatory authorities. That is why I keep focusing on the regulation, because it all keeps boiling down to regulations. National regulatory authorities in Africa, in their initiatives to combat substandard and falsified medical products. And look, people just want to make money from the look of things. Now, if you have people that are selling illegal drugs like cocaine, of course there are people that will sell, pharmaceutical products that did not pass all the proper checkings for them to be rolled out for mass consumption or mass distribution.
Yeah.
But to make sure that the only medicine that is in your pharmacy or that's in your health sector is one that has been vetted in terms of safety for prescription, and who has the authority to prescribe, because there are different types of medicine. The two main categories in terms of distributions is you have the over the counter one. You can just go to any pharmacy and over the counter you can get yourself paracetamol. But I, for example, cannot just walk in a pharmacy without a prescription and get me propranolol for my essential tremors. The pharmacist will ask, where's your prescription? So, and this is like the two main divisions. Now, what that means is the regulatory reference here is that the AMA and MFA both realized that if you want to solve problems of, you know, falsely labeled meds, and that's one thing that they also realized. And, you know, I don't want to say Madagascar COVID-19 type of meds, but the point is, what you have here is a regulation.
That was a novel idea.
It was a novel idea.
It even speaks into into Ali Yusuf's part of his speech here in this foreword of this strategy document, this plan, this preparedness plan. Should I help you with that explanation? I'm just listening.
Please go.
This reality must challenge us collectively. Our populations must no longer depend exclusively on the priorities, funding, supply chains, and production capacities of other regions of the world to protect their health and lives. This is why this crisis must accelerate our agenda for health sovereignty. I'll stop there. Hamoud?
Our health sovereignty, huh?
I'll stop there.
Okay, how does health sovereignty works? We have a bunch of PhD or advanced degree holders on this corner. Mm. We know that it starts with either you spending a whole lot of money on intellectual property, you know, information on research that have already been done for you to mass produce, think franchise type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm now combining mass produce and franchise, hence the mass produce. Now.
You came up with a new word on English.
Yeah, you know, just, glued them together. But now, that's the option. It's either we go with that direction, which we all know we can't afford that direction because we don't have the money. Otherwise, we would be asking the people that have the intellectual property to borrow us the money so we can buy the intellectual property, which would be stupid. Not that we haven't done it. We do it all the time. Borrow money for infrastructure development, steal the money, and then go and borrow it back again. I mean,
do you know what's one of the funny things, Amon? And then we there where the infrastructure is being installed there in your country, you tell one of the local school kids to come and sing and dance there when the project is being unveiled.
Uh-huh.
Now, every time, how boring does this picture get? Every time when a new piece of infrastructure gets installed, now you have to bring a local school's dance troupe or cultural group out, let them sing and dance there because this infrastructure is being unveiled. Why? It's a bridge. It's supposed to do its job. Now we're here to sing and dance and make a whole...
Well, what are you doing? It's employment creation.
It's not.
The speechwriter wrote a speech, so he got paid.
And the speechwriter already has a job. It's the PA of somebody.
Well, okay, how about S&T of the you know, no, honorable it's... guy who is going to give a speech and show up with a giant scissor to cut a ribbon. And look, the things that we do.
No. If we change our mindset as Africans, Hamoud. For example, what is good to see? Like, for example, President Nandi Ndaitwa last year, pressing the button to switch on that machine that switched, I think it's a furnace or something, at the Oshavela high iron complex there in Irongo region. Something like that. Then you know this is a technology not in Namibia. This is a process that will enhance Namibia's potential to participate in the green industries. Not for a bridge. Not for a new piece of road. Or for speed humps that are being installed now between Rehoboth and Windhoek. To my disastrous surprise when I drove past it earlier today, I was like, you're really installing speed humps between Windhoek and Rehoboth?
Yeah.
But yeah, at first I thought it was the police. It wasn't. It's just a bunch of, you know, buckies sitting there and the guys are just, you drill there, you drill there. You do this.
Yeah.
That's it. So, when we look at these...
Next thing you know, you have a bunch of speed humps between Shivarongo and...
It seems like this is just within the Comas region. This is so far just in the Comas region.
Okay, but it's the Ministry of Works.
Yeah. So, what I think is it works probably through the regional council onto the ground.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I'm thinking, as in everything else, this is a trial run. So if it works...
It's a dumb trial run, Helmut, because you are negating the word bypass, freeway, highway.
We can come up with our own things, like speed hump way. And
that is what would be all, you know, bump way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bumps on that
actually
road.
I think it must be hump way. No, that's not going to go.
No, helmet, no, that would just be
it's a little too X-rayed.
And that'll just be crude.
Boy, that's crude. Now,
So when we look at the dimension of what this particular development translates to, Ali Yusuf is speaking as a continent together.
Mm-hmm.
But we are focusing in completely different direction, Helmut, on what we should look at in our societies. For example, Namibia, if you look at each one of Namibia's ministries, each of the ministries will have a lovely policy document. Okay, let me check out the word lovely. But they will have a policy document at least present. Mm-hmm. It might be outdated. It might no longer be applicable to the current situation as we sit here.
Yeah.
But at least you will find at least one historic document that speaks towards what this ministry has to do. Or you'll have the overarching document like a national development plan. Or like the Harambe Prosperity Plan. Now, when we back on Friday, remember the question I asked Ivar Ishikovits about when they spoke to the other Africans across the continent, did they ask them whether or not these youths from the other parts of the continent are aware of any national development frameworks that their governments brought out? Obviously, Ivar said they didn't really ask that question because, you know, that they developed their own particular survey direction and survey questions and aims and motivations. So, okay, yes, you can forgive that particular part. However, in the rest of the continent, Helmut, to be honest with you, it'll probably take a little bit of a lengthy exercise, but it'll be an exercise nonetheless for me probably to engage in, just to try and understand, does anybody else have a national development framework like Namibia? I know South Africa has one, and South Africa's one probably has longer time frames, you know?
Yeah.
But when we look at this particular discussion, a national development plan helps to set where you want to take your country. And then your donor partners show up because then they go like, yeah, you know what, Dwight, Namibia, you guys are just awesome. You know, you've got lovely planning. Helmut's favorite phrase. You've got lovely planning, a lovely document. We can help you achieve those goals as long as you pay interest. And then Namibia goes and says, you know what, we'll have a listen. You know, let's have a cup of tea, a cup of coffee.
Please
have a seat. We'll even offer you South African imported biscuits.
Yeah.
And let's see where these proposals could go in terms of the donor funding available. Now, currently, Namibia is hot property. Namibia is hot property. But Helmut, we have to ask the question also, being hot property, does it translate into anything for us on the ground? There, I will tell you, be cautious. Let's first wait and see. Because currently, right now, to be honest, I don't know where to follow the US-Israel-Iran conflict, because they are shooting at each other, then they stop. Then they say, no, things are positive, we might be somewhere, then they start shooting at each other, then someone else joins the shooting, and then it becomes a whole mass shooting situation, and then they stop. And then they say, no, we hate each other, we don't want to talk to each other, but we're not shooting for now. And then the ones start shooting, and then they start shooting again. I mean, what kind of childishness is this in 2026 to look at?
That is the right word, childish.
What kind of international childishness is this for grown men?
Yeah.
That's why I said international childishness, grown men.
Yep.
Now, here's the worst part. Now, when you think about military strategies, Nahmud, for you to shoot a rocket from your country into my country, I now have to sit here thinking, okay, must I now go and invade him for shooting that rocket? If I invade him, that now becomes a full-on war. What happens? What are my actions from here? What are my responses from here? Now, sitting in 2026, realizing that someone can press a button that can change your life, probably forever,
yeah,
or never, because, you know, if you're dead, your dead might, you know, your life, you know, stopped right there, you know, it's klaar, it's omen forbij, you know, it's finito. But if you get injured, then your life is changed, you know, forever from there. I mean, we can work around aviation. You know, how flight paths and planes can be deviated. We can work around that. It's easy peasy lemon squeezy. What we can't work around specifically is loss of life. Now, loss of life, coming now into an African context, looks in the format of fragile health systems. Because, for example, Helmut, why should the whole of the AU respond for what started in DRC? And then you realize, oh, it's because the guy that's infected with this Ebola is walking across the border into Uganda. Because the two epicenters are most DRC and Uganda.
Uganda, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's like four or five countries around them. Thank God it's not Zambia. But four or five countries around those two countries that are also factored into the potential, you know, gallivanting of patient zeros. And when I say patient zeros, guys, you guys should always watch sci-fi movies specifically about zombie outbreaks and stuff like that. Because those movie directors, they research actual health response measures. So that, you know, so that the dialogue and the knowledge and the discussions, you know, can actually move somewhere in a storytelling sequence.
Yeah, make it as interesting. At least as realistic as possible.
Definitely. So when you go and watch, for those of you guys that love watching The Walking Dead or any other related zombie apocalypse movies, which I technically hate because it's a dumb plot. Because it's a truly dumb, it's a lazy plot above anything else.
Zombie.
Yeah, the zombie apocalypse. Because it's like the jail movies. The prison movies.
Yeah.
That a lot of guys, I don't know why men love prison movies. Have you realized that?
It's
a funny fascination by men to love a prison system, a prison movie. With all the violence. I mean, who would like their freedoms to be boxed off and this is now Hunger Games times 1 million?
I think the last prison movie I've seen, you know, I watched this, not a movie actually, it was a series, Prison Break when it came out. I was glued to that thing. And then I just took a whole different direction into anything with humor and sci-fi.
Yeah.
But I feel like
Prison Break was interesting because the main character was an engineer, and his selling point was, I can break you out.
Your favorite character was the engineer?
Yeah, the main guy was. What's his name? Wentworth Miller's character.
Yeah, what's this? Michael Scofield.
Yeah.
Mine was T-Big Bigel.
You know, you even picked the guy with the weirdest nickname.
Yeah.
Is T-Bag the guy that is the Mexican in the piece? Or is it the other guy?
No, that's Sucre.
Sucre is technically not even Mexican because he's actually an American.
Look,
Americans love the stereotypes.
T-Bag in Prison Break is one character that a lot of people find the most annoying person. And the thing is, it's what he does, what he says, yeah, and the seriousness with which he says all kinds of ridiculous things.
Yeah.
There's a time when something happened to the air conditioner in the prison. And it was getting hot as hell.
T-Bag, the crazy guy.
The crazy guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I started following the T-Bag character like crazy. When the air conditioner, you know, stopped working in there, in the prison, and it was getting very hot. And he rallied, he brought together a bunch of guys to sort of like, basically do the T-Bag thing of intimidating the guards.
Yeah.
And his exact words were like, it's getting hot in here. Why can't we just move us to someplace cool? Like, you know, like Africa.
It's someplace cool, huh?
Yeah, why don't you just move us all to someplace cool like Africa? Now, look, the Tibet character, whoever wrote that thing,
yeah,
made it to sound like, I mean, look, he's the most, anti-women and anti-African or anti-anything, that's why, only when he's in trouble, that's when he start quoting scripture word for word.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's Tibet. So, prison movies. Okay, one thing I find fascinating about zombie movies is, maybe I think of it more in sort of like what would happen if it was real.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be fun if there was a zombie apocalypse. Because in case if you have seen all the zombie movies, most of them just feature, you know, all the zombies that you see, most if not all of them, are adults. That would not be the case in real life.
Yeah, until people go and play Dead Space and Resident Evil.
Yeah.
And there's a Resident Evil TV show coming, so definitely you'll have a whole bunch of people that watching that TV show. But, you were still saying, Amos.
So just to bring a pause on the whole, you know, TV show things and coming back to the CDC discussion. Is it Bandy? I can't read that word, I swear. That's why I'm just calling it the Ebola virus. The Ebola virus.
Bundibugyo. Bugyo, yeah. Bundibugyo.
Assuming that's not an insult, that
okay, you were still saying serious faces.
Yeah. So the Ebola Continental Preparedness Plan. There are a lot of people that basically gave a bunch of speeches there, because you have. Pardon me. You have Ndayishimiye, the President of Republic of Burundi, chairperson of the President of the Republic of Burundi, and the chairperson of the African Union, I found that a little, you know, confusing. And you have the, you know, cupcakes here with like a Jet Magazine type smile. He also sort of like gave his own forward style.
Why are you calling him cupcakes?
Well, there was this kid that went viral because he called him that to his face.
Really?
Yeah.
The kid called him cupcakes?
Yeah.
We won't say here live on air, guys, because the South Africans might be listening.
Look, he just laughed it off. I mean, he's a very cool guy when he's not hiding money in the sofas. Sort of like gave it away. Anyway.
When he's not motivating Namibian entrepreneurial endeavors.
When he's,
I think Ramaphosa is no longer gonna, he's not gonna hire any Namibians.
Nah.
Never again.
The first question in the interview, if you're going to work for a Palapala farm, is, are you by any chance a Namibian?
Do you have any Namibian connection?
If the answer is yes, I'm afraid.
You are rejected. Just go.
So the finance that this project is going to need, it's running until November, but according to resources now, on resource mobilization, this is what, you know, this is what it's saying, and that's on page 43. The ongoing Ebola outbreak presents a critical public health challenge requiring an urgent, coordinated, and well-resourced response all across, across affected and at-risk countries, especially the neighboring countries. Now, in response to the evolving epidemiological situation, World Health Organization, AFRO, and AFRO-CDC has jointly developed a continental preparedness and response plan with an estimated budget requirement of 413 million. Make it 414 million. To support preparedness, preparedness, response operation, cross-border coordination. Now, here's the thing. The reason why I kept singing the song of why are we talking about planning now when we have had literal decades to come up with ideas like this is, how did we get to the point of talking about, you know, Africa Continental Free Trade Area? You know, let's use IDs to cross and move into different countries. Let's remove all the visas because it's expensive and difficult to travel to outside Africa than intra-Africa trade and intra-Africa travel.
Yeah, but my roads are rubbish and your roads are nice and flat and soft. And let's say David's roads are probably washed away every year.
And you know what's worse when it comes to the health discussion?
Yeah.
You know, do you remember the Anthony Joshua car accident incident in Nigeria?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was 2 years ago, ne? 2024.
Now, ask yourself one question.
What was it, 2023?
Now, this is a high-profile, global high-profile figure.
No, that was 2024.
Who had an accident in a country that brought, you know, that brought the health emergency response of the entire country under spotlight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if this happened to Anthony Joshua, what is happening to an ordinary Nigerian?
Because in Anthony Joshua's accident,
yeah,
it was lack of response, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lack of response. But let's play, let's even come closer to Namibia.
Yeah.
For example, Namibia is trying to curb with reckless driving on its national road networks, on its national highways. Because we've got...
You're not helping the speed humps, buddy.
No, I'm really not helping with the speed humps discussion. Reason being is because the speed humps are not the solution. And the reason why I say the speed humps are not the solution is primarily the... Which factors into your question of what have we been doing?
Yeah.
If Namibia had reliable commuter infrastructure...
Yeah.
Like a railway line and stuff between a major urban settlements of Namibia. Helmut, I would not need... I would probably say, okay, wake up early at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
to catch a 6 a.m. train that takes 3 hours to get from Windhoek to Rehoboth. No problem. But you know what? I would not have to pay attention in driving.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have to pay $400 to put in diesel or petrol or whatever. I would not have to drive the car. Someone else takes the burden of transporting me. But we didn't look that far. We didn't look that far. When we've got to look at the discussions of how to bring services to ourselves, African countries are failing deeply. And I'm saying on an ugly scale. So you cited Anthony Joshua, which is a good point, Helmut, because it also brought up the scenarios of what the ordinary Nigerian is facing.
Mm-hmm.
But let's also factor this in. Primarily, we know that we go to elections every year. I say every year, as if it's literally happening every year in Namibia. But yeah, let's just play with that idea. We go to elections every year on this continent. Ne? Zambia is apparently having an election later this year.
Yeah, Ethiopia recently had theirs.
Yeah. Ethiopia's won. I wonder how do you still vote for Abiy Ahmed after he was responsible for technically killing fellow Ethiopians in the civil war of 2020 to 2021. I would not vote for such a guy. Even though the Tigrayan political party from the province of Tigray, even though those guys were partially responsible as well, I would still not be...
So he's
as a voter, I would still not support. I would not even show up to an election for a guy who decided to send the army.
So he was supposed to be the adult.
Why not, Helmut? Why can't he not be the adult? For example, also like the discussion. If we look at the discussion on let's say the CDC discussion. Why can't DRC in Uganda? They've got us enough money. Why can't they respond themselves? Technically, in trying to curb, contain, and thus also trying to beat the spread of Ebola. Why does it now have to become an AU thing, an Africa thing? But every year, the same disease breaks out in the same provinces, in the same countries? And you want to respond with the same measures? Then we have to then start asking questions of, okay, so what are you not doing right, DRC? Where are you spending your budgets on, DRC? Or is this also a misplacement of budgetary allocations in some African countries? There's a good thing that you pointed. Okay, actually, I also contributed about the roads, the disconnection of the roads. Ali Yusuf's words, ne, of vaccine sovereignty or health sovereignty, I don't know whose medical system is captured, ne. But I don't know what he's talking about, in all honesty. I'm literally confused with just that sentence in his foreword in this plan about sovereignty. Well, you know, you could have done Madagascar.
Yeah.
What was the guy that bought the Malagasy COVID response? That president from Tanzania, the one that passed away?
Did Tanzania buy the
bought a batch before the batch. before their president passed away.
John Magufuli.
Yeah. Is it Magufuli?
Yeah.
Magufuli believed in the Madagascan COVID response. I don't know how effective the thing was.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I felt? How much?
I think that is exactly why research and development is done.
Exactly. But do you know why?
Skip all the procedures in the middle and go straight to, you know what?
Trust me, bro. I cooked something up in my kitchen. But do you know what I felt, Hamoud, during that response? I was hoping, okay, I want to see which continents are going to come up with. During that year of 2020, which continents are going to come up with possible, their tailored solutions in terms of how they're going to manage and deal with the COVID responses in their countries? Remember, Madagascar and Tanzania are major tourism hubs on this continent. And these countries were hard hit because a lot of those tourists decided to fly, not back home, to their countries. Because a lot of the tourists thought, okay, if I can't fly in Europe or in China, mm-hmm. let me fly to an African country. Let me go hide there. But before that, ad break, guys.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
13 minutes left to the hour of 7. That means we're about to come to the end of our show for today. So you are on the how do we say, not just the planning, but the resource mobilization.
Yeah.
Like, you can even look at this from a regional resource mobilization.
Or not even regional. I mean, it's embarrassing every time to know that you're on a continent now where we have to stand with
have to be bailed out.
To be bailed out, to have to stand with a begging. I mean, it's just for us that the World Health Organization comes up with a preparedness plan. And then you go see in reports on the ground, specifically from other news agencies on the continent, what's actually happening in that country. Helmut, I look at a few things. For example, when these other reporters go into communities, I look at the road services, meaning infrastructure. I look at standard of living, or what is the kind of living, everyday living, that people in these other African countries have. And then I look at the person, how things are prepared. Helmut, if you go to Asia, or if you go to even Europe, and you find an informal market, you would not believe me if I told you, but the thing is actually formalized. But it's an informal market. When you come to Africa, the first thing you have to fear for your life, the first thing you have to fear for in an informal market is for your life. Because first and foremost, you don't know, is the facility clean? Is the presentation of the food, if it's food, clean? Is it healthy enough? You have to ask all these questions. Now, you could potentially also argue this of many street vendors. Look, I also buy from street vendors, guys.
Yeah.
But street vendors approved by Helmut. That's how I know. But I also...
Just peanuts, dude. But yeah. Highly approved.
Yeah. So, but even when you look at, for example, Helmut, like that vicinity around those street vendors, these ladies here, where you and I, we buy the peanuts sometimes from. Did you see the unhygienic circumstances around them?
I mean, that whole fence have been turned into...
a partial public toilet, yes.
Yeah.
And not just that, where they sit on that part of the sidewalk, where they sit, also looks dirty, unkept, as well as also, it really doesn't give value to what they're trying to do, which is basically fend for themselves every day. Mm. But discussions like this, if you go even to Asia, they've got a whole, it's a market. It's markets there. And it's just all kinds of food you will find there. From fish to vegetables to what? You know it, you want it, you get it. When it comes here to Africa, when you come to Africa, you first have to fend for your life, because you now have to wonder, oh my goodness, is there going to be Ebola here or not?
Now, did you see this map?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very nice map.
Yeah.
You're
showing me the map because that's how I see it, Helmut. Okay.
You're only seeing it now.
Yeah.
Now, this map...
I saw it.
Thank you.
I looked at it on Saturday. I was like, after waking up from my headache, I was like, are these people serious? And this was at a health convention, eh?
This flawed map, don't worry, I will fill you in into as to what map we are talking about. This flawed map opened during a State Department slide presentation at an...
U.S. State Department.
U.S. State Department presentation at an AIDS conference in Brazil on Sunday about Washington's funding for programs tackling HIV. The State Department has described it as an unfortunate error caused when a team member hurriedly altered the slide deck before the event. Okay, now my question is, did they use Microsoft to glue these countries together? That because we know Microsoft, if you just move one picture, everything goes haywire. Unless you use, I use TextRep for the most part, and your pictures doesn't screw up your entire document. And because what I don't understand is how, because this for just for an existing map, that's impossible.
Yes. And if you knew your geography for that person, it would still be impossible, level 2. if they had consulted any other map before their own map, it would have been impossible, level 3. But the reason was, one of the reasons, and I don't know if that article shows it there.
First of all.
Is they threw it into an AI prompter.
Oh, yeah. No, just forget it. AI.
Yeah, it was an AI prompt.
That is
AI. And it was an open AI
mechanism. Definitely AI.
It was an open AI mechanism that was used by the US government representatives there. So the person decided to quickly throw it in and then asked, identify these African countries, which probably were in the presentation. That's why the borders look so weird when you saw the borders.
Yeah, because there's no Mozambique doesn't look like that.
And Mozambique doesn't sit that high either on the continent. And there's another country that was also weird. Malawi is very weird.
Yeah, you have Nigeria, who is now in the Sahel region.
Yeah.
And you have Mozambique, who is the side of Djibouti.
Yeah.
And you have Uganda, who is in parts of Kenya and Ethiopia, just the, you know, just
somewhere there.
Yeah, intruding. And you have Ivory Coast is now occupying where basically you'd find Mozambique.
Yeah.
And you have Malawi is now about to go to war with Botswana and Zambia and Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And you have what's this one here? That's that one at the bottom there. They didn't even label that one. I'm assuming that you know what. This is either just this is on purpose or this is AI. One of these two. And I'm going with AI.
No, the explanation I was given apparently is AI.
Look, South Africa went through this earlier this year when they were told to draft an AI regulation. Then they asked AI to draft an AI regulation.
Mm.
It's about telling your babysitter to babysit your kids, and then they sit around asking the kids what is the best way to babysit them. You think there's a single kid on this planet that will give you the best ways to babysit them?
They'll probably say, you not being here?
They'll tell you, for one, you maybe not being here would be a good start.
Yeah, let's try that part.
Yeah.
And an unlimited supply of...
anything with sugar.
Yes.
Hand it over.
Yes. No funny foods, no vegetables.
Yep.
No funny fruits.
Gory games and movies. Let's have those two.
That's it. And... unlimited time to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
That's what a kid will tell you.
Then they, probably, setting the house on fire.
In between years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was just, hilarious. turns out, 200 million to Nigeria, 180 million to Mozambique, 60 million to Uganda, at least, and you have 50 million to Ivory Coast, 35 million, and this is and you have up to for all the all the figures basically, up to 35 million annually. That's for Malawi, and up to 5.4 million for Cameroon. It doesn't one of the hardest hit in terms of HIV. I think the lack of HIV meds.
Yeah.
Because of the DOGE programs of cutting funding to all the international programs, including PEPFAR that has helped with the HIV meds for victims or like sufferers of that disease, was a place called Gaza Province in Mozambique.
Mm.
And it's one of those places where the knock-on effect of more like the domino effect that is emanating from the DOGE programs are now being felt severely. Again, so you have Mozambique that is now having that type of trouble in terms of what's the best way to take care of their people in terms of HIV, after the DOGE programs. And you have DRC and Uganda. And basically that part of Central Africa that have been battling with Ebola. And you have Zambia, Zimbabwe, Ghana, throwing Kenya in that bucket, that have you know, for a better part of last year into this year, have walked into eggshells with regards to how to better, you know, how to whether or not to accept the America First Global Health Strategy, you know, initiatives being, you know, being proposed to them by the Americans. All these things, all it required was planning, because you can't help me, you can't help me, we're in 2026. We're in 2026.
Yeah.
And we're still saying, Kimi Tiger.
Yes. We're in 2026, we're still doing this.
Yeah.
It's not going to end anytime soon, Helmut, because, I mean, I know that in South Africa, what did you call him, Helmut? Chocolates? Or what? Cupcakes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know that in that scenario of South Africa, back in during COVID, South Africa's biggest headache was they have the labs, the pharmaceutical labs. They just couldn't get approval to manufacture a vaccine. That was a COVID
intellectual
scenario.
Intellectual property.
Yeah, because it was intellectual property, and at that stage, the dispute arose from one of those American pharmaceuticals who said, yes, Africa CDC can get the...
They can manufacture.
The recipe.
Yeah.
And when Africa CDC got the recipe, and the Africa CDC went like, okay, we'll give it to the South African laboratory, then suddenly it was, no, you don't do that. And then that's where this vaccine sovereignty and vaccine, what was the other label, apartheid or colonization situation came from.
Just find yourself. Find your own programs. What colonization?
Stash your cash. Don't break the bank. Stash your cash with WB. Buy 2 kg packs of Tastic Rice for $69.99. A 1 kg box of Jungle Oats for $37.99. A 2 litre Oros for only $36.99 with Smart Buy. And 2 2-litre bottles of Stay Soft for just $89.99. See more month-end deals at voermanbrock.com. We care. Stash your cash.
Welcome back. It's 7 o'clock on the dot. That brings us to the end of today's Home Run. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station. From me, y'all have a blessed evening.
And on that note, dear listeners, stay tuned for the rest of the programming after the break, and we'll see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.